I think you should build a career in data science.
Welcome to Build a Career in Data Science. I'm your host, Emily Robinson.
And I'm also your host, Jacqueline Nolas.
This podcast is a data download into all the non-technical knowledge and skills you need to succeed in a data science career. In season one, each episode is about a chapter from our book, also called Build a Career in Data Science. You can buy the book at bestbook.cool and get 40% off with the code BUILDBOOK40%. But if you don't have it yet, you won't get any less enjoyment out of the podcast.
But Your Honor, if it pleases the court, you should just buy it.
Come buy it. Do it.
Come buy it. Come on.
Yes, and hopefully convince you. So today's topic is one of my favorite chapters in the book. It's about a subject I'm personally very passionate about, which is joining the data science community. So this is, you know, pretty broad statement. So we're going to talk about in this podcast different ways you can get involved in and give back to the data science community through things like blogging, speaking, going to meetups or conferences, and even contributing to open source projects.
Yeah, and I find it really fulfilling. Like, I don't know, you go to work, you do some stuff for other people, but like the doing the community, it's like, I don't know, it's like, it feels more like, hey, I did this thing. I made this little part of the world a better place. You know, like I find it fulfilling in a way that I do not find true to be with most jobs that I get paid for.
Yeah. So Vicky Boykus was one of the keynotes at our studio conference this year, and she talked about it. And she said, like, a metaphor of curating like your own public garden. So when there's obviously a lot of news going around and like lots of things in the world, like having something that you can kind of curate a space and that you put out there and you want to share. And so if you haven't heard of it, like Vicky, for example, writes a really great newsletter on lots of topics, very well researched, although also with the pandemic and young kids, she also acknowledges that it's not always easy to do this. But the nice thing about this sort of stuff is just because you do a blog post, just because you give a talk, doesn't mean then you are committed for life to do that, right? You can dip your toes in and out depending on what else is going on in your work or your personal life, and you can have different seasons of doing public work.
Yeah, although strangely, I do find that you do kind of get like a little bit of a like, it's not entirely guilt-free. Like, I do feel bad if I, you know, say, oh, and the second blog post is coming soon. It takes a year. I do it. Oh, I do it. But I feel
that's
bad.
Good.
Yeah.
I think my like one of my first blog posts from 2016 was supposed to have a follow-up, and here we are 4.5 years later. And there's almost no way there's going to be a follow-up. So
now that the technology is obsolete, let me follow up with the blog post.
Well, a lot of my blog posts aren't on technology, so I think it would still be applicable, but I've kind of moved on. But that does sort of bring us to one thing though, which is I think, I feel like this, like if people think about doing public work, it can be very intimidating because it can feel like, so one barrier could be like, well, I don't know enough. I'm an aspiring data scientist. I'm maybe a junior data scientist. And who, you know, would want to hear from me. But that's what I want to say is, one, your blog post does not have to be a PhD thesis, right? It can be. So Jacqueline, I'd love if you talk a little bit about what you've been trying now, which is, at least for me, and we talked about this in the building portfolio episode and chapter, you know, things can languish a while because, you know, usually there's not a deadline. It's not clear what done is. And I know you mentioned with one of your most recent blog posts, you're trying to get like shorter posts out quicker rather than let it, you know, languish on your computer trying to make it perfect or thinking maybe I just need to add one more thing.
Yeah. So when people talk about joining the community, they really just mean putting stuff out there for other people to use in a way that's not part of your job, like just, you know, for fun, right? So it could be blog posts. It could be open source projects. It could be going to a giving conference. It's any sort of I am doing stuff for the world that, you know, is just something I think other people will like and enjoy. And yeah, I think blog posts are a very traditional way to do, a classic way to do this. And I really like writing blog posts. And I think with blog posts especially, you kind of have this feeling of you have to polish them and get them real good, right? You gotta write a draft and then rewrite it and then polish it and change the wording. And oh, you know, actually there's an easier way to write the code. So you're gonna redo. That can be true, but you could also sometimes just have an interesting idea, write it down in an evening and then hit submit and there's still typos in there, whatever. And that's fine. And I think it's easy to think, if you haven't tried blogging stuff before, it's easy to think it's only the do it the fancy official way. But also, yeah, like for me, especially with like having a kid and stuff myself, it's not, you don't always get time to spend weeks on one blog post. That like the best you can do is just get the idea there and go. And I will also say that I think with blog posts, conferences, whatever, there's this kind of notion that people have that like, you should only write about something that's new or like something that's going to teach things in ways no one's ever done before and blah, blah, blah. And that's just like not at all true. Like a blog post doesn't have to be like a totally new, innovative, whatever. You can be doing the exact same thing as someone else, but it's just your attempt at it. Like that can be an interesting blog post. Like really a blog post just has to be, I am writing about something that other people would get value out of reading, right? And so like for me, when I learned neural networks the first time, I wrote a blog post about it. And like, I didn't make an interesting network. I just copied someone else's and changed it a little bit. And that's fine. You know, like, yeah, you don't have to be like a, you know, super hardcore inventor creating novel things to blog. You can just write about what you like.
Yeah. And I think two things that have helped me in terms of like, where do my blog post ideas come from? Is one, there's a resource that I wish I had had earlier. So for example, if I'm learning a new topic, maybe I cobble together from a couple tutorials how to do this, and I read something in a book, and one of my coworkers tells me something, and I was like, wow, I really wish like this had just, all these like knowledge had just been together in one place. And so I might write a blog post about that. Or second one is, so this was some said by my brother Dave, which is if you get asked the for the like the same question three times or for the same piece of advice three times, write a blog post. So I think that for sure for me was one of the big reasons for writing the book and doing this podcast was because a lot of people, you know, I'd see they're like not necessarily asking me, but who knows, like on Reddit, or people would ask me like, hey, how do I get into data science? Can you look over my resume? You know, why do you think my job applications aren't succeeding? And so on. And so I realized, you know, I could help a lot more people rather, you know, and I still do kind of one-on-one conversations. But this way, I mean, I like to think our book has helped people that we would have never gotten a chance to meet in person, maybe never would have met us. But this is a way to kind of like, you know, like I said, like give back and be sort of a resource that I would have liked and that I think can help at least some people.
Yeah. So I think that's one approach, which is people are constantly asking me these questions on these topics. I'm going to write a blog post. So instead of trying to say the same thing exactly every time, I can just, make it come out, just hand them a link to the blog post. And there's a very valid reason. Another valid reason, and this one I actually think I maybe do more, is sometimes you just work on something that like is a weird thing that you think is interesting and you want more than just you to get value out of it. Like, so for me, I did a weird thing with the R Shiny package and getting it to actually authenticate via Twitter. So like you can log in, you can like get Twitter to, you know, where it does the thing where it redirects you to Twitter and you sign in for this app, like getting that to work with Shiny. Like there are probably 20 people in the world who actually want that functionality in Shiny, but I was one of them and I figured out how to do it. And I think that's fascinating. And I just want that to be out there in the world so that one day when one person somewhere maybe wants to be the 21st person to do it, they can, they have that. And like, I don't know, I get a lot of value in just doing standard projects like that for myself. And I think being like, oh, cool, there's more than a literal one person benefit to this is, I find that rewarding.
Right. And the extra person might be you 2 years from now trying to do the same thing. I've definitely seen people, I've referenced yeah. my own blog post before. I've seen a lot of people say that they do that because they're like, yeah, I forgot how to do this, but I knew it at one point and I wrote it down. And
yeah, so especially if you have like working code samples. Absolutely. Yes. And I've done that. Yeah, that's very helpful.
yeah, but I do want to put a little bit of a, I guess like a disclaimer here. And I think we may mention this in episode 4 too, but that like, I don't want it to make it seem like you have to do any of this to either get a data science job or be a good data scientist. So, I mean, sort of by definition, the data scientists that you'll see around you probably are because they're involved some way publicly, even if it's just being on Twitter or you see them on a conference, right? So like that, most of the data scientists you see, you're seeing them because they're doing public work. And to not make that, you know, don't think that, you know, there aren't tons of very smart, very successful, very fulfilled data scientists, you know, who maybe never speak at conferences, don't really go to meetups, don't blog. I certainly, and we are going to talk about, like, as we already did a bit, like the benefits we get from it, but I don't want to make it seem like this is a mandatory thing if you want to succeed in your data science career, because it's not.
Yeah. And there really are like huge amounts of levels, different levels you can contribute to the community, whatever. Like you could just go to your PyData, Our Ladies, whatever, your local data science meetup of choice once every 2 months. And just by attending, you are helping the community by just having more people there to converse and talk and stuff. Like that is a totally valid way to engage in the community. You don't have to be going around, be flying around the country giving keynotes or whatever, like, or have a million Twitter followers. Like you can just go and make friends. And that is actually still a good thing and value. So yeah, there's really a lot of levels, and it you don't have to do it. And if you do it, you don't have to do it that hard.
Yeah. But I want to talk about that. So you mentioned like making friends. And to me, that's been huge. Like I think, you know, networking can get a bad rap, right? In terms of people like, oh, it feels so transactional. It feels like icky. It's artificial. It's going and handing out business cards or whatever. But like, it really doesn't have to be like that. And, you know, I've met so many great people through going to meetups and conferences or on Twitter first and getting to see in person. I mean, and Jacqueline, you and I met because we were both speaking at the same conference, right? And that led to, I'd like to think a really good friendship as well as obviously a very successful co-authorship.
Right, really putting the tough questions out in the middle of the pocket. No, I think it's a good friendship.
Thanks, Jacqueline.
Okay, but I want to say that I think people talk about this a lot. If you join a community, you make friends, blah, blah, blah. Conversely, I've also had the problem, especially when I first started going to meetups and stuff and like trying to engage the community. It's very easy to go to a meetup, not know anyone there, feel kind of awkward and leave. And that's happened to me multiple times. And so just because it can be an avenue to make friends and things like that, do not think that, oh, you had an awkward encounter. That means there's something fundamentally broken about you. Is also a great avenue to accidentally make awkward moment, you know, like, or you, lots of people write blog posts and that those blog posts do not get that many views necessarily. And that doesn't mean the blog posts aren't bad or good. It's just who happened to retweet them that day and that sort of stuff. So like it's very easy to hear about the benefits of this stuff and not realize the benefits yourself immediately and then think that that is a flaw of you. But it is most certainly not. It is just sort of how the system works.
Yeah. And it's also not like, okay, you know, you start not seeing any benefits and you ramp up and then it's like amazing all the time, right? There are certainly still times where I've gone to a new meetup or something where I didn't know anyone and I like tried to engage with conversation and it was fine, but I wouldn't say I like walked away like being like, oh, I got all these people, you know, new people to get in touch with or whatever. So it just, you know, or a blog post, you know, you work hard, a blog post doesn't get that much reception, another one does, and that's great. And then the next one doesn't as much. Like it's just, you know, that's why I do think it's helpful, you know, to think about, you know, to think about like what you want to get out of it, right? So like maybe at the start, it's like, you know what, I just want to like go to a meetup. Maybe you're someone who's pretty shy and you're like, okay, you know what, this time I'm just gonna like go to the meetup. I'm just gonna attend. I'm gonna talk to one person and then I'm gonna go home. That's totally fine. And then the next time you're like, okay, let me like try talking to a few more people. And then the second part of this podcast, we're going to give some specific tips, but I'm glad you called that out, Jacqueline, because yeah, it's definitely not something that you should feel awkward about. Also, because honestly, some meetups and conferences aren't that great, right? Especially if you're someone who's part of an underrepresented group in data science, you may find that like, wow, if you know, maybe you're a woman of color, you go to a meetup and you're like, there are 45 white men here and I am the only non-white person and maybe like one of three women. You know, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a bad experience, but also not to put that on you. Like there's definitely, and I think we've talked before, like the R community is great at this of like, it does take some like work and effort to really, you know, try to make, by the organizers, try to make a very inclusive and welcoming meetup. And so if you go to one and you don't feel that welcome, you feel awkward, you feel like people aren't, you know, being friendly or welcoming, don't put that on you. And don't think that also means you won't find another one that you do really like and do really fit into.
Yeah. And another way to think about this, and I'm just kind of like, I'm thinking about what you're saying and like, kind of just pondering a little bit, is like the joining the community, writing blog posts, getting your conference, blah, blah, blah. It's some way, it's just kind of like a fun, you know, a fun evening club, like in the sense that, like, you know, there's some people who like biking and they sometimes go on bikes with rides with friends and they talk about bike stuff and you're like, oh, did you try biking this mountain? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, art people who have art gallery, like it's just the data science version of that. It's like people who mm-hmm. like data science and just want a place where they can talk to other fun people about data science. And, you know, some of them, you know, put lots of, you know, things out there and some of them don't. But it's just like getting to be a part of that sort of a thing. And like that can be a really like, besides helping your career and stuff, like it's just like life can be fun when you get more people who you can talk to about this sort of stuff. And so you don't have to do it for the retweets or whatever. It can just be like, it's just a way of making friends. But like, yeah, it's like, it's cool. It's like a cool thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think because of that, like I am much more comfortable being like dropped in. I mean, at this point, I know a lot of people like at our studio conference, for example. Well, let's say there was a brand new art conference, right? And for some reason, no one else who I know in the art community went. I would feel much more comfortable there than being dropped in a random cocktail people because, you know, you have this in common with other folks, right? You can ask them about like, oh, how did you get started in R? What did you think of that talk we just went to? You know, what's your favorite package? Whatever, right? You have this common ground starting point that even if you're someone who's maybe a little bit more shy, at least I find it a lot easier to do it at a conference where I know we share this common interest than I do like a cocktail party where I'm like, I don't even know how to like break the ice or talk to anyone and I'll just stay by the food table.
Yeah. And it's generally, there's... the data science community is not known for its, you know, its extroverted and charismatic yes, nature. Like you're going to find a lot of people who are maybe not the best with social engagement, and that's fine. Yeah. So we talked, I think, a fair amount about making blog posts, right? Blog posts, write ideas, write things you want to talk about, put it on the internet. And then like,
and for the mechanics of putting it on the internet, go back to episode 4. In chapter 4, because there we talk about like, you know, the different options for making a blog.
Yeah. But I mean, you guys are all smart data scientists. Google making a blog, like it's not, use Medium, whatever, it's fine.
Hey, Jacqueline, you have really strong opinions on this, which you won't go into, but those opinions include not using
blog down. Oh, I do have strong opinions. Yeah, there are some tools I do not much care for. I will not, that is, you're trying to push my buttons and it's going to work.
Sorry, continue.
So conferences, right? So let's talk about meetups next. So like a meetup is like basically meetups, I mean, post-COVID, let's say. Meetups are, hey, you know, generally once a month, blank organization has one person come and give a talk and a bunch of people sit in the audience. So they're like super mini conferences. And these are fun because they're generally all people in your area. So you're more likely to like see them again each month and like have, oh, what do you think about that mountain we live next to or whatever? Because they're generally smaller events, it's easier to become a speaker yourself, or if they do lightning talks where they do lots of things at once. So like, it's really like, it's like mini conference kind of a feeling. It's really like, that's like a great place to go and make friends. And then conferences are like the big version of that, where it's instead of just like some, you know, like 50 people who are local, it's like 2,000 people all in one conference hall, all across the country with 30 speakers and all that, which is just, again, an area where you can go talk to people, connect, listen to speakers, maybe speak yourself. And those are that, yeah, there's a lot. They're big fun events, as Emily was saying.
Yeah. And I think meetups are also nice, right? Because if they're local, you know, you don't have to, you know, pay any, you're staying at your home, presumably, right? And like local transportation, and also almost all of them are free. Occasionally some will have like $5, maybe, you know, $5 contribution to like help pay for food. And also, if they have limited capacity, it helps with no shows, but you know, generally it's free. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point of often people, you'll find the same people coming, you know, again and again to the meetup. And so, you know, you can form connections over time. I will say with, you know, so obviously with COVID, many meetups have gone virtual, and then I am kind of curious to see what it will be like in the quote, like post-COVID world. But I am thinking, like, I don't know, Jacqueline, how you feel, but, you know, I imagine there might be some listeners, right? If you're in a small town or a rural area or whatever, even just a suburb and you work from home and you might not want to, you know, the nearest meetup might be more than an hour away. So virtual's, you know, pretty much your only option. I do think it's much harder to, I think the talks you can get out pretty much just as much. And in fact, some meetups really benefit because now they can have non-local speakers. But I think it's much harder to meet anyone because often it's just sort of coming in for the talk and a Q&A and then people leave, unless it's like, I have been to one for like Our Ladies New York that was explicitly a social meetup where we did like breakout rooms. But in terms of regular meetups, like usually there's just not much getting to know your time. And even if there is, it's just kind of hard to coordinate. Cause like, how are you going to make chit chat in a Zoom room of 50 people?
Yeah. So, which is to say, to maybe like just put it another way, if you consider the point of these meetups to be networking, then things like virtual, it's very hard to do networking because like you don't see anyone else. So like limited networking. So there's, you know, these meetups are advantageous to people who live close to cities. But also like there is like a weird like rhythm to them where it's like really it's like the 20 minutes before is the time where all the schmoozing happens or whatever. Mm-hmm. So if you show up right at the start of the talk, where the time where the person's going to talk, then that's not good. You're not going to have the schmoozing. And if you show up, you know, too early, there's going to be no one there yet. And that's awkward and stressful. So there is like a weird like game component to it. And as you go to enough of these, you kind of figure it out. But like, yeah, just kind of, I think it helps to know if you want to just get out of it. Hey, what are the latest technologies? Mm-hmm. Now, what are people talking about these days? Meetups can be helpful, but yeah, if you want the networking, you kind of have to like think it through a little bit.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because I feel like in this chapter, when I think about like a lot of the benefits are from making connections to people and also job stuff, but it's true. Like the knowledge you get is really helpful too. Like just the other day, I saw Thomas Mock tweeted about GT, which is a package for R called the Grammar of Tables, makes really pretty tables, that he had a new, I don't know, I guess you call it like a cookbook up for it. And I shared that at work and someone said, like, this is great. I just used it today. So it is a really good way through social media or through these meetups to find out about sometimes it's the latest and greatest thing. Sometimes it's like a package or a tool that's been around for a while, but this is like an introduction to it because maybe you've never used it. Or sometimes in this case, it was like GT's been around for a little bit, but here's some great new documentation that can get you started using it. So I do think it is... You know, these are also really good ways to just like keep plugged in a little bit to the community and either see new tools or not so new tools, but maybe new to you, and good ways to get started with them.
I think when I think about conferences and meetups and like going to a talk, quote unquote talk, I would say like 1 in 5, maybe 1 in 10. Are like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like this, I didn't know this package exists. Now I knew it. This is going to change how I do stuff. I would say 2 in 5 are like, I'm not going to be able to use these tools, but it's kind of neat to hear someone using this tool to do that thing. Like, oh, that's kind of like inspiring, or like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. That's kind of fascinating. And then like the last 2 in 5 are like, actually, this had no practical use for me. I'm just happening to listen to it. But I think 1 in 5 having a, oh, this is a, you know, this is actually changing your workflow kind of a thing is still like, that's really good. And like,
That's right. I would say mine's more like 2 in 5 changes my workflow. Another 2 in 5, I'm glad I know about because sometimes they will help other people. Like when I'm talking to someone, like maybe I don't use this, but like someone else is like, oh, did you know you can do GitHub Actions with this? You can do that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just picky about the talks I go to.
Maybe. Well, I don't know. I feel like I go to a lot of talks to like, you know, I used a neural network to determine which fish are most likely to blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I will never do fish stuff, but it's kind of neat to like, I don't know. I like it's kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's true. I mean, I do think, that's why it's helpful though. It's kind of helpful to think about like multiple benefits, right? So maybe sometimes you go to a meetup, the talk's maybe not that interesting, but you meet someone, or sometimes it's the opposite, right? Like, oh, today you just like weren't feeling it. You don't meet anyone new, but you learned a really cool new thing at the talk. Or like a third thing, you get to talking with the organizer and they are looking for speakers for the lightning talk coming up. And so you get your first speaking opportunity.
Yeah. And the value of speaking, you know, just the point of like, why speak? Why not just attend? Is like, if you speak, then everyone is going to, for 10 minutes, understand, you know, loosely what you are and what you're doing, which means that instead of you going up to everyone being like, hey, I'm blah, 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 you get the benefit of people coming to you and saying, wow, your work seems so much like my work. We should talk, or things like that. So it is incredibly valuable. If you like the networking stuff, being the speaker is really valuable. And it's also just fun. If you built a weird shiny app that authenticates via Twitter, it's cool to actually get to talk about it in a place where everyone's listening. Like, I don't know, I find that, as a person who loves attention, as you can tell by the fact that I have a podcast, like, I don't know, I get a big thrill out of that. It's very, very rush.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm quite introverted, but I've said in talks before, like, yeah, that exactly what you said, actually, like, that's why speaking's great for introverts, because you don't have to put yourself out. Like, you got to put yourself out there by speaking, but then the networking part, people come to you. And I don't know, you also get some cool opportunities. So now fortunately, the third one was canceled by COVID, but I've now gotten flown out internationally twice, once to London, one to like outside of Amsterdam to speak at a meetup at a conference. Jacqueline looks a little jealous. Sorry. This is not necessarily that common. Flown out
to Amsterdam. Yeah. Hey, listeners, if you're listening, you're like, oh, in 2 weeks, you know, a couple conferences from now, I'll be flown out to Amsterdam. I don't know. I think you
could be at some point. But anyway, no, the point is not necessarily that it's that. That being said, speaking at conference, you should basically always get your ticket comped. You should get a free ticket. So if it's conference you wanted to go to anyway, like, that's great. That's like usually like $600 to $1,200 saved. And then, yes, and sometimes, like, okay, it may not be international, but some other conferences will, as you get to be a more experienced speaker, pay for your travel and or accommodations too. And so you can get your company to pay for those things sometimes, depending on where you work. But, you know, usually that if the company's paying for it, they're probably not going to do it like 4 times a year. But if you, you know, can start speaking, that's a great way to like really, really reduce the cost of attending conferences, and then get to speak, get to get those benefits from people coming up to you, and then also like get the networking and knowledge benefits of being at the conference.
Yeah. So with that, do we want to take a break and then talk about some more stuff?
Let's do it.
So here's today's sponsor. Take command with the command line. Do you know how many minutes you waste each year using the mouse to click on items and dropdowns? The command line is a way to solely write text to tell your computer what to do. With the power of the command line, you'll be able to use tools that programmers have never gotten around to making a UI for. So CD ... your way all the way back to your trusty friend, the command line.
Yeah, I use the command line occasionally. It also becomes helpful when you start doing stuff in the cloud, right, Jacqueline?
Yeah, no, I'm surprised I said occasionally. I would say like 30% of what I do is just command line statements.
Ah, okay, mine is not nearly that high.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it can be pretty powerful. There's like also a whole book called like Data Science and the Command Line, because you can do an extra fair amount of stuff.
Yeah, well, there's so much like... you know, like Docker, like a lot, like Hugo, like there's a lot of tools that are for developers where they're like, since it's for developers, they just assume you can use the command line. So it's just, it's good. You know, I do think it ends up being a large part of my day. So,
yes. That being said, let's dive back in to, but there was no promo code. They don't get anything off
I guess
the
not.
Command line usage.
Not this week. No.
Okay, just go by Jacqueline's art instead. All right. But cool. So we've talked some about blogging, attending conferences, public speaking, but want to dive in a little bit more into like the tactics around that. But before I do that, I also wanted to add, thinking of what are some of the barriers to getting started doing this, right? Like time is maybe the most obvious one. Because usually this is outside of your work time. So if you're working a full-time job, even as a data scientist, this would be in your free time. And so one thing I wanted to mention was that all of these things can build on each other. So for example, I've written some blog posts that later became talks. And so then most of the material and the thinking around it was already written, or, you know, again, with the speaking, you know, speaking at a conference, then you kind of throw in you get together the speaking benefits as well as the attending the conference. And I'd love to hear a little bit from you, Jacqueline, right? So you, as you mentioned before, right? Like you have a kid, so you obviously have some significant outside of work, responsibilities, and you wrote a book, and you actually wrote a blog post about writing the book, very meta. But could you talk a little bit about how, you know, you have a toddler, like how you were able to find the time?
How does she do it? She does it all. I am a person who is extremely motivated by things that I find are interesting. So if I find something interesting, like, and this is actually sometimes a problem where if I find some programming problem interesting, I'll stay up till 2 a.m. doing it. Or like, you know, like I, but conversely, if I only find something half interesting, it is a huge pain to do it. And I've noticed since having a kid, things like that, it's just been more like split, like bimodal, like the things that are super interesting, I will pour time into, and things that are not super interesting, just not at all. And so I think that's really for me, like when I have a blog post, the best thing I can do, like an idea for a blog post, the best thing I can do is just write it down right away while it's still interesting to me. Remove as many barriers as possible and then just do it and then have it be done. And the worst thing I can do is like half start it and be like, I didn't really like the outline. I need to change it. And then just kind of dies. Like, and I have blog posts in the last couple months that I've started writing. And I really think it's an important topic that I was blogging about. And then I just kind of like, I lost interest. So I think that's really for me. I think that's maybe true with a lot of these different topics we talk about, where it's just like attention management and like just keeping like riding that enthusiasm high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I've also seen what's worked for some busy people I know is having like a regular schedule. So Randy Au, we've mentioned a couple times on this podcast, he has a weekly newsletter. And so I know he said like on Twitter, like that's really helped him because that deadline coming up each week, you know, and he's a young kid, like it's helped him get that out. Julia Silge and I do think maybe this is part of her work, so it's not so much the time thing, but most weeks she releases a screencast and a company blog post showing off tidy models for that week's Tidy Tuesday data set. So I know for some people that can work pretty well as just having this routine. For others like me, I think that would be really hard because I don't like being constrained. You know, my last blog post was like a year and a half ago. But again, I think that goes back to, you know, even having something out there is valuable, right? And so even if you know, I think when people look at my blog, who knows, but I don't think the first thing is like, oh, wow, she hasn't written in half a year. It's like, oh, she has this post that's helpful for me, right? And so, you know, there are times that you can do more. That's great. You can put it out there. You know, you can be speaking. And then if there's like a couple years where you don't want to speak, like, that's fine.
Yeah. And I think people, if you Google how to write a blog, a lot of times they talk about, you need to make it consistent. Make sure you're always putting out new material for your content. And that's just a lie. That's not true at all.
I think some people work like that. Even when we were writing the book, I didn't write like every day. I know some people say that, right? Like I had to write 500 words a day. It's not how I wrote it.
I think that's also how blogs more worked 10 years ago. Like people like subscribe to a blog and blah, blah, blah. But that's not how, like we don't have RSS feeds anymore. Like just we share information differently. And I just don't think there's an expectation of like people be upset because they're looking forward to Tuesdays. Emily blog.
So on that, how do you get people to read your blog, Jacqueline?
So a couple things, right? And I think this is a very common problem. You wrote your first blog post, you're really excited about it, you publish it, 10 views, right? Like nothing, or you know, just not much. So there's a couple things that I think generally help. One is if you start on a site like Medium, which automatically starts to share your content with other people, like, you know, at the bottom of like, we recommend these articles, things like that. Like the channel you use can help. If you just put it on your personal blog and it's not authorized for Google, like no one would ever see that. Two, getting it on Twitter, getting people to retweet it. That stuff can be helpful. And like, well, no one follows me on Twitter. So how would I get retweets? Well, when you go to meetups and things, you meet people, you follow them on Twitter or LinkedIn, whatever, your social medias. And also, if you see people who you find interesting on these you can comment on their stuff and then you have conversations and you do that enough time. If they find your comments interesting, sometimes they follow you. And these all eventually built and that kind of creates a network. And then lastly, the more specific your topic is, the fewer people will care about it, which is to say the blog posts I've written that I find the most fascinating are like that Twitter in shiny thing. And like, it's gotten like 300 views, like nothing. But my post on like questions I ask data scientists when I interview them, like every data scientist ever, like, or like that, that applies to so many people. And that one's gotten so many more views. So if you are just doing it for, not just, but if you're doing it for the likes, you're doing it for the retweets and whatever, generally picking more general topics tends to, you know, you're getting a broader coverage.
Yeah. I would also add for the social media part too, you know, hashtags can be helpful, not too many. Like, I feel like personally, a lot of people get turned off if you see like a post, like, you know, here's my latest blog post, and there are 20 hashtags, but even something like if, like an RStats hashtag, right? If you're posting around R, PyData, because I know some people follow that hashtag, and so see tweets with that hashtag, even if they're by people they don't follow, and so that might be a way for them to find your tweet.
Yeah, and it's kind of like this thing of like, if it looks like you're just trying to get any human possible to read your thing, it kind of turns people off. Like, they want, if you're item shows up because someone else retweeted or something, they want to know that, like, oh, you're, you know, it's something that could be interesting to you, and not like, I don't know, like a really basic data is the new oil, I don't know, you know. yeah
And I also think, like, you know, the benefits from blogging don't just come from like, oh, like tons of people like organically view my post, right? As for example, it's even just like the right people seeing it, right? Like, let's say you meet someone at a conference or whatever, and they, you know, and you introduce yourself, and later they kind of look you up and they see you have a few blog posts. They might be like, oh, that's really cool. And then they see you run a blog post about deep learning. And so like they reach out and say, hey, I loved your blog post, I'd love to learn more, or whatever. Or this happens with the job that you're interviewing, as we talked about in like the first section of our podcast. So I just want to say, like, it doesn't, getting like tens of thousands of views for the blog post, I would not go into writing a post with that goal, because one, I don't know that honestly it's that helpful anyway for like, you know, most people don't, maybe they get intrinsic value out of this, but I feel like it's partly because like, and then I'll be famous, and then I'll be easier to get hired, and then I'll meet these, you know, people. And I feel like you need a lot more than just a blog post with a ton of views to accomplish those goals.
Yeah, I would also say, like, if you're using some obscure package or library in your programming language, and you write a blog post of like, hey, here's a unusual thing I did with this, like maybe only 10 people will see that because it's such an obscure package. But one person might be the person who made that package, and they're going to care very much about your blog post, because anytime someone uses their tools, they'd be interested in it. And then that can be a connection. So like, there really isn't a correlation between, as Emily's saying, like more views and this is better. Like, it's really... yeah, it's just getting people who might be interested in your stuff to actually see that stuff.
Yeah. So should we talk about speaking, where you know exactly who your audience is, at least initially?
Sure. Yeah.
Because they're in front of you watching your talk. Yeah. Speaking, I mean, well, nowadays a lot of it's virtual. And so events are often recorded. More people might watch it later. But then you generally have a good idea, right? If you speak at a meetup, you know how many people that meetup usually gets, or at a conference, you can ask them like, hey, how many people attend the conference? You know, how many talks are going on at once? But, you know, while a blog, you can, like, you know, with a little bit of Googling, like anyone can put a blog post out there, right, for free, and there's no gatekeepers. If you want to speak in public, unless you want to start your own meetup, which is own hurdle, right, you need... an organizer of meetup, a conference, to offer you that opportunity. And so I want to talk a little bit about how maybe each of us got started speaking, because I think that can be a bit daunting. We've talked about the local meetup stuff, but maybe we can talk about also like some of the conferences, because I feel like that can be also a bit intimidating.
Yeah. So I actually thought about this. I was shocked. I went and looked back. I I'm doing the math on it. Yeah, I've only been speaking at conferences for about 3 years, which actually blows my mind, because it feels like it's been a million. But like, that's not really far, because like 3 years ago, I was submitting abstracts to conferences and getting rejected. And now, I don't know, I do lots of them. And like, so like, it doesn't take that long to kind of like network in. But like, really, I mean, really, yeah, just conferences, they'll have like a call for proposals. They generally, conferences work like this. There are some people that the conference are like, ah, we want to get these big names in here to draw in a crowd. And like, those are your keynotes or like certain whatever. And those people maybe look at the hotel paid for and like, you know, they get the perks. We're flown to Amsterdam.
You sound so bitter, Jackal.
Well, no, it's the joke. Yeah, now I can't let that joke go. But for most of the time, so there's like 10% of the speakers are these like keynotes or whatever. And then the other 90% are you submit an idea for a talk and they decide if it's good or not. And in some ways, the idea of the work of submitting an abstract for a talk is a little bit like writing a blog post, right? You need some topic that you think some other people are going to be interested in, and you got to kind of hook them in real quick and be like, hey, I can say something unusual, you know, something unique and valuable on the subject. And I would like to do it in your venue. And it's just kind of, it takes time to learn the, like, what are things people care about? And like, what, how do you word these things? And like, you just kind of work at it a little bit and chip away. And then, yeah, as you start to get invited to stuff, then people know your name and they kind of skim your abstract more and more because they just know who you are and what you do. And like, you kind of just get in a little more easily. But I mean, at its core, it still starts with that same kind of like, hey, what is like, what am I going to do that's interesting that other people want to know about?
Yeah. And I think there's like a ton of good resources online. If you just Google like writing a good tech conference abstract, right? There's a lot of resources out there, as Jacqueline mentioned, like things like having a hook, also making sure it's relevant to the conference that you'll be speaking at, right? If it's a conference about the Julia language, they may not be interested in how you use MATLAB in grad school or whatever. And then I will say though, I think actually a fair amount of the conferences I've spoken at, maybe this is a bias sample, have been the invitation only, and not just for keynotes, but like for everyone at the conference. I don't know, New York R is one of them. And was it Day-to-Day Texas where we met? I mean, did you submit an abstract?
That is one of the only times I have not submitted.
So those are two conferences.
Of
New York
like
R and Day-to-Day Texas.
And I've talked at or like something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't. And so like, okay,
I don't know. I'm not flying to Amsterdam.
Okay. Never mentioned that again. But for me, like what I found really to be true is the snowball effect. So what I mean is like the first time I ever spoke was July 2017. It was at the New York R meetup. That's because I've been attending for a while, got to know Jared Lander, who's the organizer. He asked me to speak. And then someone from West Point saw that talk, asked me to come up to speak to their faculty. And then for the Day-to-Day Texas conference, I knew Hillary Parker, who I was working at Etsy at the time. She used to work at Etsy. And so she was speaking there. She recommended me to them. And then our studio, I submitted an abstract. But then a lot of it was kind of snowballing, right? Because once you have some of these conferences under your belt, especially if the talks were recorded, right, that gives other conferences like the confidence that, okay, well, one, you might draw people because you're getting more well-known as a speaker, but that also like, okay, you have this track record of you've spoken at these conferences that we've heard of, or I can even watch your talk recorded. So I know I believe you'll do a good job. And so that's where, you know, getting that experience at meetups or at conferences where you can submit abstracts, and some of them do a blind abstract review, so they don't look at who submitted it. And so, you know, in some ways you're on a more equal playing field. Those can be ways. And then like, I've actually found now, I think partly because of COVID, and Jacqueline's going to give me the side eye maybe again for like humble bragging, but I am actually, and you do this too, Jacqueline, like I am turning down some stuff. I do find like once you start becoming a little bit more known in the community, that you will find a good amount of speaking opportunities, and just getting those first couple under your belt, you'll find the next ones come a lot more quickly.
Yeah, I will say it's kind of exhilarating to give, and I was saying this in the earlier, it's like, it's kind of exhilarating to give talks, right? Because you're like, oh my God, I get to talk about something I really like, and all these people are interested, and they come up and ask questions at the end, and I get like retweets, and people excitedly, like it's very exhilarating. But I had a year where me and Heather were both giving talks, and like we did like six talks together in like 2 months. And by the end, I'm like, this is too much. And yeah, I just hit a point where I'm like, I'm going to intentionally dial back, because even it is exhilarating in the moment, it is not worth it to like get burnt out by this.
Yes.
So that like there are all sorts of reasons why you may not want to do as many of these as you can. But I do think that you just got to kind of start at it. And there really is like, it, I don't think it's this like, oh, only people, the only people who get to speak are people who people already know. It's like a, you know, everyone's buds. Like there are lots and lots of conferences that are really put a lot of effort into making sure that they are, you know, not biased against new people or in fact biased towards new people and especially seek them out.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Ryan. And some also offer like mentoring for first time speakers or abstract review before you submit your abstract to. Yes. I'm glad you called. And even the invitation ones are not necessarily like, oh, we only invite the same people back every year. It's like they talk to the speakers like, hey, who have you seen like maybe only a local meetup or like this other thing? Who you think? Jacqueline's still looking at me. Okay, fine.
I'm just thinking. Fine. Keep going.
I'm thinking. No, but I'm glad you brought that up, right? And I think that's why the CFP part, right, is like the nice thing. So now I've actually forgotten what that stands for. Conference
Form. Call for Proposals.
Call for Proposals. Thank you. Yes, I do think that, again, kind of evens the playing field because, you know, anyone can submit a proposal and that's a great way to like speak at a conference for the first time.
Yeah. And I will say, okay, so if you don't want to speak at conferences, what if you just want to attend conferences? How do you do that? This is also one of these things where if you're kind of in the loop, it's good. You already know which are the good conferences and things like that. But if you're like, I'm a data scientist, I'm going to Google data science conference.
Yeah.
You will find a lot of things that are maybe not so good. So this is, again, where if you start to go to meetups, what are the people at the meetups going to? Do you have some people you follow on Twitter? Like, I honestly, the first, like, our studio conference, one of my favorite conferences, and, like, I only really found out about it by seeing all the people I follow on Twitter talk about how fun it was, like, when I was not there. And I'm like, well, this is not right. So I would, you know, try and, like, I think that stuff works better than Google searches or looking at lists of conferences, things like that, because, like, it's just so unlikely that any online resource besides humans is going to cater to the same interests that you actually have.
Yeah. I will say, though, I think you can find out some stuff about the conferences. So we talk in the book, like, how do conferences differ? And so there are a couple ways, right? So size is a big one. So there are some smaller conferences that are maybe 400 people, 300. And then there are some conferences that I think like Grace Hopper is, I don't know, like 30,000. I don't know how much, I've never been, but it's like at least a couple thousand. I think a lot more than that. So that's just a totally different experience when you have like this like huge hotel where everyone's staying in and like, you know, 20 talks going on at once versus a one track conference.
Or like reInvent, like reInvent is like 60,000, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
So I would say, and I personally recommend like starting at a smaller conference because I think that's just like less overwhelming, a lot easier to meet people because you'll probably keep running into the same folks. So that's sort of what I recommend. And then there's other stuff you can find out, like, is this a very academic conference, right? So like NeurIPS and JSM, both those conferences, a lot of people come who are in academia. And it's just sort of like a different, I mean, I've never been to either of them, but from what I said, it's just kind of a different feel from the more industry-focused conferences, which may also have some, you know, professors or grad students, but also have a bunch of people doing data science in practice. And so the talks and whatever are less focused on like, oh, this groundbreaking, you know, new theory with lots of math equations and more some like practical applications and case studies.
Yeah. And when it comes to paying for some of these conferences, if you're working at a medium or big size company, or even a small company, a lot of times there is budget to go to conferences. And it's definitely worth it to ask your manager of like, hey, here's a you say it like this, hey, here's a conference. It's related to our interests in these particular ways. I think I'll learn skills that you will help our team like this. Can I have funding to go? And oftentimes you will get funding. That said, if you can't get funding, it sometimes I know people, and I think I have personally also on occasion got paid my own cash to go to a conference. And that is not like, sometimes that is the right move. Sometimes it's not. But like, you know, like, it's just kind of the mental math you have to decide. And it's just what your preferences are.
And I think for that, if you're paying your own money, I would definitely try to make sure like through that Cuban kind of knowledge that Jacqueline mentioned, that this is like a conference with a good reputation that you'll like. And maybe also, again, you start at one that's local to you or that is, you know, so you don't have to pay for travel and accommodation and just the conference ticket price.
Yeah. Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah, we also have some, I'll just quickly shout, we have some specific tips in our book too, if I think like sometimes people can be like, oh, but how do I like act at a conference? What's dress code? All that stuff. And like, you know, those, again, that kind of human thing, if you can find some folks who have gone before, like that's a super helpful way to get a little bit of the lowdown of like, what's the vibe of the conference?
So with that, shall we close it up and go to the game?
Let's do it.
Okay, so here's this week's game. Here's an activity. So we are both, you and me both, we are each going to write the title of a talk. And then the other person has to write the abstract for that talk. So I'm going to write a title, and you're going to write the abstract of it, and you're going to write a title, I'm going to write a abstract. And the title has to be true conference form. It has to be kind of jokey thing, colon, the serious thing we're talking about, you know, where it's like, you're like, rags to riches, colon, the fabrics, you know, effect on economy, you know, like one of those. So that is okay. The game. Yeah.
Two questions. Yeah.
Sure.
Are we doing it data science related?
No, in fact, let's not do it. I don't think that I meant to mention that. Neither of them should be data science related.
And should we try to make like a, like, even though it's not data science related, a somewhat realistic abstract, or should we just go for?
I think just have fun with it. Just see what comes. See what comes.
Better having fun. I'm like, they need lessons from the game. And you're like, we gotta have fun at the game.
I do. Yeah. Well, yeah. This one especially. I'm like, let's just have some fun.
Yes, it reminds me. Wait, can you share briefly what you and Heather did for? What was
it, this
Seattle
is what inspired
talks?
It. Yeah. Me and Heather Nolis did this with actually gave lightning talks where we made the PowerPoints for the lightning talk, and the other person had to present the lightning talk without ever having seen the slides before or know anything about the topic. It was a good time, and so I was hoping to recreate it in this game.
Yes.
And so,
okay,
let's take a few seconds to think of it. And I'm gonna edit this so we can take like actually like 2 or 3 minutes if you want to like if because I know okay, like okay, I don't want to rush like take some time
and yeah then, can
and then
be
we'll take a few
related?
More minutes yeah
no I'll, the first the problem is I always say the same dog really, but I'll think of something else okay yes I will take these
I had
seconds.
One idea this afternoon I was thinking of the game for your talk but I decided I'm not going to use it in the spirit of we should each have a new thing so I'm also going to spend some time right now thinking about what the game is. So did you think of one?
I'm ready.
Okay. So since this is my game, I will give you the choice. I guess we each will say what the thing is, and then we'll take a few seconds to come up with what the actual abstracts are, and then we will reveal them.
Yes.
Okay.
Sounds
so
good.
I can go first. So mine is all bark, no bite, and bite spelled with a Y, why dogs are incapable of programming.
That actually is like sort of related. Okay, that's great.
But it doesn't have to. Yeah.
You know. I love dogs. Okay. All right. So mine is murder, math, cards, and counting. Why everyone should learn bridge.
Okay, perfect. I don't know anything about bridge, so we'll have real fun with it. Okay. Say again.
You know,
sorry,
spades?
I want to write it down. Murder, math.
Okay. Murder, math, cards, and counting. Colon. Why everyone should learn bridge.
Okay, awesome.
And it was why dogs are incapable of learning programming or
no,
just programming?
I'll say it again. All bark, no bite. Why dogs are incapable of programming.
Okay.
This is teaching our listeners valuable lessons on how to write abstracts for conferences, maybe.
I do like the bite pun. Yeah.
Thank you.
The pun is always appreciated. Okay, yeah. So let's...
Okay, so we'll take a few seconds. We'll write the abstracts and then we will reveal. So, okay.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, so that was a couple of minutes that we spent just quietly writing down our different abstracts, but I edited that out because I don't think minutes of silence is generally a well-liked thing in podcasts. So do you feel good about yours?
I feel good. I think I could keynote with this talk.
Good. Okay. And I think we were kind of joking that, like, what is the core benefit of this game? But, like, I think there is, like, some real, like, how do you write an abstract? Mm-hmm. That, like, can you even write about these strange topics? So since it was my game, I will give you the choice. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first. Because okay. I feel like yours is going to be really good. So I want to get mine out of mine. At least I know more about dogs than you know about Bridge. So. Yeah. All right. All bark and no bite. Oh, sorry. All bark, no bite. Why dogs are incapable of programming. Have you ever looked at your furry friend and thought, maybe I could get them to do my job for me? Unfortunately, our canine companions will never be able to make a plot or navigate our studio. In this talk, I'll cover the three largest barriers to dogs programming: dexterity limitations, insufficient motivation, and distractibility. While you may leave this talk with your dog programming dreams dashed, you'll come away with a better understanding of their limits and learn why maybe you should have had a cat all along.
That's very good. I'm really impressed. You really ran with that.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it. Can I talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, talk about it. Yeah. No,
okay. Talk. Yeah, I feel like I kind of use like, there's sort of like a structure to abstracts. So like most of them are paragraphs, like 4 to 5 sentences. And there's the hook, you know, it's kind of like, okay, why would someone be interested? It's usually lead with, obviously this is kind of made up. Most people have probably not looked at their dogs and wondered if they program, but you might say like, oh, have you run into, you know, memory limitations, or if you wish you could, you know, do whatever. Right. And then so you sort of pose that question or problem. And then you say, okay, in this talk, I'm going to answer it. And so like some of my talks I've given on the lesser known stars, the Tidyverse, I said in this talk, I'll cover, you know, these three packages. And then I end with like, okay, at the end of the talk, you'll be able to do like X, Y, Z, or you'll know these things. So I feel like that's a pretty common structure for an abstract, because basically you're trying to, you know, obviously like sell the conference organizers on your talk. But also if you're in a multi-track conference, you want to sell the audience. And so really framing it as, okay, why would someone be interested, and what are they going to learn in your talk, and what will they be able to do after your talk that they couldn't do before?
I agree with all that. And my abstract follows that same thing pretty well. And also, this kind of is how blog posts and everything in this kind of area of space kind of works, right? You set up what the problem statement is, right? You looked at your dog and you want to know, can they type? Like, you set up the problem. You talk about, well, it's not so easy, there's complications. And then, hey, I'm going to pitch you, like, here's what I got. You know, we're going to talk about it. You know, like that kind of set up the problem, get people interested, entice them with possible solutions and opportunities. Like that's like the core to all of this. So with that, let me do my abstract. Murder, math, cards, and counting. Why everyone should learn Bridge. Oh, sorry. I should mention, I have never played Bridge. I know almost nothing about Bridge except that Emily and her husband play it a lot. And that's how they met. And that's a meet cute. So we're just gonna like just roll with it, everyone, okay?
I mean, I'm pretty sure none of our listeners know much about Bridge either. So the demographic of it is like 80 plus. Yeah.
Murder, math, cards, and counting. Why everyone should learn Bridge. Bridge, normally known as a game played by the elderly, is a game that all would benefit to learn. The intrigue and suspense, as well as cash winnings, resonate with boomers, zoomers, and zennials. The mathematical skills gained by playing Bridge are helpful in all sorts of strange places, even splitting the bill at restaurants with friends. In this talk, I will enumerate the many benefits of Bridge and discuss how to get more people to play the game.
Nice. I feel like you missed the opportunity to make up something about the murder in the title.
I didn't know if that was like a Bridge term. Like, is a murder a thing?
There was a famous, famous in the Bridge world, a murder, like, I don't know, in the 30s, I think a wife shot her husband over a hand. If you Google it, I should find it.
I didn't know if it was like, oh, in Bridge, a murder is 2 aces and a 3. And like, so I was trying to cover my bases there.
That's fair. You did a great job. Apparently, I just Googled murder Bridge and we just see lots of things legalized. But there's also, Bridge murder case.
Oh, yeah, murder Bridge. Like people being thrown off Bridge.
Yes. Yeah, a Kansas City housewife murdered her husband over a game of Bridge in 1929. There you go.
Well, that would be one slide in my talk. I still did the same thing you did, where it was like, problem, intrigue.
Right, exactly. You're like questioning the assumption, right? You're like, oh, we think of Bridge as elderly people, but you know, you're making them question their assumption, right? Actually, everyone can benefit. You list some of those benefits. Yeah, and I think you entice people, right? Because, you know, you talk about this mathematical benefit that you can get to split the bill, right? But they need to come to your talk in order to gain that benefit. So you're giving them like a little taste of like, yeah, here are the things you're gonna take away and be able to do after this talk.
Yeah, and actually, this is a really big benefit of joining the community and giving talks and doing blog posts is like you actually, and I didn't realize this, I didn't really think about it until just right now. Like, this is actually a skill of like, how do you make an enticing talk? How do you make an enticing blog post to get people interested? That skill is useful when it's like, I need to make an analysis, right? Like, I think yes. We talked about that. Like that, this is a great way to train the skill of, I'm going to try and rope in people and get them interested in something that I think they will be interested in, but I'll just reel them in. And so, this is a really nice way to gain that.
Yeah. Just practice those communication skills that even if you're, giving a talk externally, that's also practice for like giving a talk internally as well, right? If you're not that comfortable public speaking, it may benefit your career, your company at some point to be able to like speak in front of the CEOs or whatever, or speak at a company, like all hands. As we kind of end this out, I think we didn't talk about that much. We talked about more of like the benefits. Oh, you get to meet people, maybe like fly some places, but at least I have definitely benefited a lot in my career for having done some public work. So I will say, even though it's a time investment, it has saved me time in other places. Like it has saved me time. No, so like in terms of like applying to some place, because like people might reach out to me, or, you know, I might be more likely to get like at least a first round interview because they're like, oh, they're familiar with the profile. So I do think it, or doing a, you know, actually I just talked with someone who managed to talk and they're actually going to use a project they did at work, but they talked a hiring manager out of giving them a technical take home into allowing them to do instead a 30-minute presentation on their work. So that's a case where like they're saving some time. So technical take home could be hours. Instead, they get a, you know, make a presentation that maybe they can use in another job interview, or they can also leverage. They've given some talks around projects they've done. They could, you know, start with one of those talks. So I just want to kind of close it out with saying there's a lot of benefits here, some more like intangible, but there's also some very tangible career benefits.
Yeah. And so with that, let's call it an episode.
All right. So that's our show for the week. Check us out on our next episode as we discuss leaving your job. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. If you have questions or feedback, you can send an email to podcast@bestbook.cool. Again, you can buy a copy of the book at bestbook.cool and use BuildBook 40%, that's 40% symbol, for 40% off. Our theme song is by the extremely funny Matt Bouchel, and thanks to our publisher Manning for helping our book exist.
And may your decision trees not have too many leaves.